Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeed, it is the Boomer and the Babe Show here at Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, October 11th, 2011, and we are broadcasting from the studio in Youngtown, Arizona, as the announcer voice says. We'll be getting to our guest in just a minute, but before I do, I want to remind our listeners that the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is involved in much more than just this radio show. We also do things like videos for your website and videos for your promotions. We also get involved in publishing of ebooks and mini books, and many of our ebook authors have their own show here on Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk Radio. We are truly a multifaceted multimedia marketing company. And we have a guest today, and our guest on the line is Donna Marie Thompson. And for some reason, we had her, and she's gone. I don't know what's going on with the system here, but I can see her on the line, and I'm trying to click on there, and it doesn't seem to be making a connection. Are you there? Oh, there. She's there or not? Oh, well, let's see what we can do here as we're trying to get her on live. It keeps showing up as a mute. Donna, if you can hear me while we're trying to connect with you, are you there, Donna? Oh, my goodness. Donna, if you can hear me, if you please call in again, I'm going to disconnect the call, and if you would call in again, I would appreciate it. The number you called is correct, but please give me a shout back, and I'm going to hang you up right now, and I'll just kind of sit and wait for you to come back in again. But in the meantime, let me give you a little background on Donna. Donna is a PhD, and she has written and coaches Bouncing Back Now. She is what she calls a Bouncing Back Now coach, is the best-selling author of a certified professional coach and a certified NLP practitioner and a master practitioner of Energy Leadership Index. Donna Marie is listed as one of America's premier experts in personal development, and she is hosting the Bouncing Back Now TV show and the Bouncing Back Now radio show on the Real Coaching Radio TV network and Web Talk Radio. Donna Marie has been featured expert panelist on Living Consciously. The series is on Denver Cable TV, and she is a national guest on many shows on the radio, including the Brian Tracy TV show as well, as has been seen on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox affiliates. So at any rate, Donna is certainly very well known and very well learned in what she's talking about, because she has faced many problems herself, and she has managed to bounce back royally. So we're kind of waiting for her to call back in again, and I don't know why we're not seeing her now, but for some reason we have just seemed to have lost her. So what we're going to do is I have a best of that I'm going to play for a little while until she comes back in. So I'm going to hit the record button of some of the best of the Boomer and the Babe. There'll be a conversation with Tony Felice, PR, public relations, and there'll be a conversation with a gentleman by the name of Dave Barnhart, who talks about social media and Twitter. And I'm going to play that for a moment and see if we can't get hold of Donna. And we'll be back live shortly.
overarching all of that is one simple message, and that's how do you make a difference in people's lives?
And we have our guest, Donna Marie, is with us, Donna Marie Thompson from Bouncing Back Now, and where she is. And Donna, are you there? Donna Marie, are you there? My goodness, we don't seem to be able to have her on the line for some reason. I don't know what's going on with the situation here. Hello, Donna Marie?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, let's see if it holds this time. I've got you, finally.
Okay.
I've caught you. You've been very elusive on the board this morning.
It was not intentional.
No, I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying your microphone symbol has been very elusive. I've been chasing it all over.
Well, good. I'm glad you found it.
How are you today?
Fantastic.
Good, good. I when we were waiting to try to make this connection, as it was some technical difficulties were going on, I was reading your bio about your Bouncing Back Now coaching and so on and so forth, but I didn't get into your story. And if Deborah, here we go, I'm going to have problems with this today, I can see. If Deborah were here, unfortunately she's not, she would ask you for your two-minute movie. We ask all of our guests for a two-minute movie, and what she means by that is, how did you get to where you are? We don't want to know necessarily your story as you've written it, that you've given me the notes on, but what were you doing prior to your story? And then we'll get into your story and everything else you're involved in from that point forward. So you've got 2 minutes, and you have our ears, so please
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, prior to my story, I was living the perfect life. I was getting ready to retire very early. I was engaged to be married. I was ready to quit work and move to Florida and live a perfectly wonderful life. I'd worked like a maniac for 38 years, 60-hour weeks, traveling all over the world, and was totally exhausted. And I was ready to take this opportunity to change every dimension of my life and really begin living my life, because at the rate I was working, I certainly was not living my life. So it was very much a whole new page, a whole new chapter in my life before my story.
So your story actually started to take place. The story is that has been this great change in your existence, shall we say. That began how long ago?
Well, the 2005 was the beginning of that, when I was supposed to retire. And at the same time, my mother was very seriously ill, and I needed to sell a rental property in Florida in order to retire, but my fiancé was renting it. And after we had been companions for 17 years, we then became engaged, and I thought everything was perfect, but in the year and a half that he lived in my house, he decided that he loved my house more than he loved me.
Oh, my.
It was quite devastating, I must tell you.
I would imagine. So why don't you go ahead and if you don't mind, fill in some of the details so we can see where you've come from and what you've arrived at.
Okay. Well, in the whole confluence of it, my mother had Alzheimer's, and we were dealing with it really, really well. She was doing as well as could be expected, and I put her in a wonderful assisted living, and she was very happy. Unfortunately, she then became the victim of a medical error, which began an entire year of complete chaos. She was in and out of the hospital about 12 times in a year. It was just absolutely horrible. So I'm managing this from 1,000 miles away, and as you can imagine, my entire attention was focused on getting her the best possible care and doing the best I could given what I had to work with. At the same time, we approached the sale of this house, which in any other time in this entire decade, it would have been fine, but it led me into the Florida real estate crash. So by my fiancé hanging onto my house, I really couldn't forcibly evict him when I was dealing with my mother. So I let him stay, and that dragged me into the Florida real estate crash, where I lost half the money in that house. Given all of these losses, I lost my money, my mother, and my man all at once. My health then took a huge spill. And I ended up with a pinched nerve in my neck, and I went down for 10 months where I couldn't use my right hand. I had 540 hours of sick leave, 40 physical therapies, 2 shots in my spine, 8 occupational therapies to get my right hand back, and it just I mean, if you can get down, I was down, curled up in a ball on the ground. Just horrible, horrific, devastation situation.
Well, it certainly sounds as though you had quite a bit to come back from. But now you had this, I don't know, for lack of a better term, because I haven't heard the story, all the story yet, but you had some sort of an awakening, undoubtedly, as far as what you were going to do. Why don't you just kind of tell us how that came to pass?
Well, my recovery was part of there were three pillars in my recovery. The first, right after my mother had the medical error, I just really had no idea what to do. You're powerless in those situations. So I reached back to my faith, which I hadn't even touched for about 40 years. And so the faith was the beginning of it. And second, I realized that I really didn't know how to cope with all of these things that were going on. So instead of going to a coach, I became a coach. And I learned about 50 or 60 different tools that you can use to assess situations differently and react differently and really set a course for a well-balanced life, and not the kind I was living. And then the third piece of it was I started a business as a coaching practice and other tools and books so that I could help others. When people hear about my recovery, they're really excited that it's possible to come back from all of this and end up sounding like me. And so I realized that if I was able to find this path, that others might benefit from it too. So kicking off the business was really a way to help me, help myself as well as help others. And it took my mind off all the things that I had lost, because when you start focusing outward, it changes everything about your perspective. And you realize that other people have troubles too, not just you. You're not alone. And these tools are so effective, and it even makes you stronger when you work with others to help them through.
Right. Now, the three pillars that form the basis of your recovery, which one did you use the most yourself?
Well, they're probably in order. The faith was instrumental because everything was crashing down around me when my mom had, the Alzheimer's was bad enough, but a medical error on top, I had nowhere to go, nowhere to turn. So at that point, my faith actually grounded me. Once I had that grounding, I then did the coaching because I just didn't know how I was responding to things. So I would say that each of the pillars were sequential and that one laid the foundation for the other.
So as you're going through your three pillars, at what point did you decide that you were going to be a coach? Or is this kind of a thing that just materialized over time? You had an aha that says, hey, I can help people because I can see that it works for me. How did that come into play?
Well, it actually came into play in my recovery, that I started looking online for empowerment and positivity and just tools for coping, and I came upon my coaching school, and I realized that not only did I not just want to be a coachee, that I really wanted to own and master these tools, because now it's set up the rest of my life. I have all these tools and techniques. So I hadn't really intended on being a practicing coach, but I went to the whole coach training program just to make sure that I had every tool, to teach them to fish kind of thing. I wanted to make sure I knew everything I could do to make sure I could manage these situations, although I'm not sure I'd ever face some four horrific losses like this ever again. I hope not.
I hope not, too.
Yeah. My mom's gone, so there's no way to do that again. But I never intended to actually be a practicing coach. But as I became certified and people started coming to me, then I realized, well, that's what I'm supposed to do, because if people are seeking me out for help, then I'm very, very happy to be able to do that for them.
Is that the point at which you became a certified NLP practitioner?
Right, a little bit after that. Once I got the appetite for these tools, it became insatiable. And the NLP is really fantastic because of the imagery. And it's like, have you ever heard of laser coaching, where you can change something in 10 minutes? Well, I didn't believe it. It didn't sound like you make any sense. But it's a combination of imagery and a little bit of hypnosis, where you find, like if you're addicted to sugar or something, you could replace that with something that's very disagreeable, and you just change your mindset that instead of sugar or cigarettes or whatever that you really are compelled to do, you could make them repulsive. And NLP helps you do that. And I thought, well, that's a really nice tool to have. So now that I know tools, I'm always looking for new and better tools, both for me and for all my different people that I work and coach with.
Now, NLP is neuro-linguistic programming, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
I wanted to make sure that I had that right, because we and I thought that's what it was, obviously. But we have a gentleman that's a friend of ours, and he is an NLP certified, a master certified practitioner, I believe is how the term goes.
Yes.
He has also has a radio show. He has a radio show on terrestrial radio where we used to broadcast on a terrestrial radio station. And we would be on Dave's show and Dave would be on ours. And it was funny one time when Dave was on our show, it just happened that as Deborah and I were driving to the show, we had a disagreement. And we're having this disagreement, and we walked into the studio not talking to one another. And that's pretty tough when your partner's on the radio.
Yes, I can see that.
So there was Dave. and Deborah opened her yap, shall we say, and submitted me to something via Dave that I had no intention of doing. And Dave was doing that. Well, how did that make you feel, Pete?
Dr. Phil. That's Dr. Phil. There you go.
And I said, Dave, it's none of your damn business. But we made light of it, and everything was fine, and everything was peaches and cream again. But it was absolutely one of the best little radio shticks we've ever done. That was with an NLP practitioner trying to get us back together. Because we weren't apart anyhow, but, I mean, trying to get us whole, shall we say.
Yeah, and
but
see how fast it worked?
Yeah, just like that. I mean, just like the snap of a finger, and then there it was. But it was done well and in good humor, and I shook my head as I walked out of the studio, and I said, I never intended to do that on the air, that's for sure. But now I tell this story willingly because it's a fun story. But NLP does work, and I do believe it works. And now there are some pretty famous people that are involved in NLP, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. Well, I took the course through Steve Jones, and there's a number of international practitioners. And you can do it. I do it at a very light level. I integrate it into my coaching practice, and I use it when I see that it's a viable tool. There's others that's their entire focus of their practice. So it really depends on what you're looking for. But I integrate it fully into my coaching, and it really, just the imagery. I work on a recovery plan where people are, if you've just broken up or something, or if you've lost someone, you really can't find any happiness. And so one of the techniques I use is just take them to an outdoor cafe, and we put them on a sidewalk, and the sun is shining, and you're at this beautiful little table with a green umbrella, and the sky is blue, and there's puffy clouds, and all of a sudden, you're at the outdoor cafe, and you didn't even know you went there. And so I teach them, if you could be happy like that in 15 seconds,
right,
why not take yourself there? Because they didn't even realize they could ever be happy again. And I just got them to visualize that. And so that's the power of letting your mind create new images, especially when you're stuck. That's the people come to me when they're stuck.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you especially work with people that have suffered loss of some sort? Is that sort of your area of expertise?
Yes, my website is Bouncing Back Now, and I work with people that have lost a job, lost a relationship, lost significant things in their lives, lost money, different things like that, because there's a mindset where you have to grieve the loss, and then you've got to rectify it and get back up on the horse and live the rest of your life. And when you decide that loss is a normal part of life, that's an entirely different perspective. When you've suffered a significant loss, you tend to feel very alone, like you're a victim, and that no one else ever had anything similar to you, that yours is the worst. And we all feel that way for a little while. And then you start talking to people, and, you know, people have lost sisters and brothers and the loss of a child, and you're like, my goodness, loss is a normal part of life. But most of us don't recognize that. So even that shift is huge, that not, you're not a victim. It's just part of life. And then you're like, okay, well, now here's my loss, and I'd rather take my loss than what, you know, some other people's losses are worse than mine. And
sure.
then you say, okay, well, now I've got my loss. What am I going to do about it in the future? And that's that whole piece where if you stop looking back, you live in the present, accept what is, then you can have a new future. And it's an amazing process where we can get you unstuck and, you know, really begin to every day that you waste grieving and, you know, spinning in your mind is a day that you're not outside enjoying, walking, kayaking, playing with your pets, playing with your kids, you know, just relaxing. Each day is a precious gift. Do you want to spend that spinning and ruminating, or do you want to spend it laying the foundation for a new future?
Well, I see that this you have something called the five E's. I'm on your website as we're talking, and you have the section there with the five E's to recovery.
Yes.
Well, what are the five E's?
Well, the five E's are basically what I used. They weren't the five E's as I did them, but it's what I did myself. And by eliminating all the stuff that didn't work and pulling together the stuff that worked for me, this is what I came up with. So the first E is explore what happened. And you really take the time to write down everything that happened. Even if it takes 10 pages, just keep writing. And you explore, and what you do is you unload all of that. And that alone is part of the healing. The second is eliminate unwanted feelings. And before I was a coach, I didn't even realize that was possible. But it is, just like my cafe example, I can transport you anywhere. And so you can begin to eliminate feelings on your own. The third E is embrace the situation. And if you're a follower of Byron Katie, loving what is. What is, there's no way to change your past. You are where you are today, so why don't you just accept it? And you could even begin to enjoy it. So that's embrace the situation. The fourth E is the huge leap, where you envision a new future for yourself. You're never going to go back. The future is going to be completely different than if your loss hadn't happened, but you can start your new future today. And the fifth is energize your world, where you actually implement your plans and you reach out and help others. And that's why I was so excited about the business that I started, was because I was doing that. I was energizing my plans by taking the focus off myself and reaching out and helping others.
Which of those five, I understand that they're probably all very equal and important, but is there one or two of those that you think once they've gotten to that the rest of them might come a little bit easier? Is there one that is more key than the others?
I think number two, eliminate unwanted feelings. If you go back to Eleanor Roosevelt about no one can hurt your feelings without your permission, I didn't know what that meant. I thought that insults or whatever people said or did to you, you had to take it on. Once you understand that you can control your feelings, they can come into your mind, but you can dismiss them. So once you learn how that you have the power, say, I'm angry. Well, how long you want to be angry? Okay, you want to be angry for 10 minutes? Fine. Go ahead, be angry for 10 minutes, then move on. Then you realize, well, geez, why should I be angry for 10 minutes? I'll be angry for 1 minute. And then you realize I don't need to be angry at all. And you can actually just let those feelings pass right by, and you can choose. And I think that's foundational for your recovery, because it's a first time, maybe in your life, where you realize the power that you have to see the way you think, the way you feel, the way you act is all within your control.
That's interesting, because I just read something somewhere. I don't know if it was even on, possibly on Facebook or something. These people put their little things that they like and they've heard, and they post them sometimes. And it had to do with, I can't remember it exactly, but it had to do with if somebody is antagonizing you, or, you know, getting in your face, so to speak, you've got to put it out of your mind, because otherwise you're just giving them free rent in your brain.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that.
And that's not a direct quote. I wish
right.
I could remember it. But that was the principle, that you're just giving them space in your brain by allowing them to dwell there. And I went, well, yeah, that's right. Let's get this guy out of my head right now. You know, that's what I started thinking. And it sounds like there's some similarities there.
Well, there is. It's the same as holding a grudge. Like,
yep.
If someone, you know, like, takes your parking space or whatever, and you're sitting there fuming for the next 15 minutes. Well, the person is already parked and gone, and you're
exactly.
still sitting there spending 15 minutes of your life fuming at this guy who took your space. And you're like, well, who's benefiting from this, and who's being harmed? And when you realize that you're actually harming yourself because you're the punishment that you're sending him, he's not getting it. So.
Right.
Once you realize how completely ineffective it is against him and how damaging it is for you, then you just really get control of it. And it's just so much fun when you learn to live your life like this. I'm a completely different person now. All the crazy things that happen to you in traffic, at the bank, you know, at work, all the things that, all the arrows that come at you, they don't get near me now. I have this acrylic shield, like if you think of a SWAT team where they carry those shields.
Yes.
I have an acrylic shield that's clear so that I can see and hear what they're saying, but I don't let it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because the people that are doing that, whether it be by design or just, let's call it ignorance, in either case, they've done it. They've inflicted or thought they've inflicted whatever they've done, and they've moved on, and they just don't give a royal rip, and they could care less, and it's out of their mind, I'll guarantee you. They're not worried about it, so
right.
Why should we?
Well, that's what I try to tell my coaching clients, is thinking, what did you do? Each day you have 24 hours, and you're in control of those. What do you want to accomplish? What do you want to do? And, you know, so my sister said this to me, and you're like, and? how much time? And I actually have people work out charts to say, you want to be angry? You want to be sad? You want to be lonely? How much time are you voluntarily going to allocate to these emotions? And then they start backing off and say, well, geez, I'm not going to cry for an hour. And I say, well, then how long? You know, and by forcing them to realize that they can begin and end when they want, it's very powerful. So I just have so much fun watching people just waken up to their power.
Well, it sounds like you have a much nicer way of doing it than I do. My way of doing it is, all right, get over it and move on.
Well, as long as it works for you. But
some
people are highly sensitive, yeah.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, I mean, you have a nice, much nicer way of talking to people about it than I would. I would just say, you know what, get over it, move on. It's done. You know, it's like I can liken a lot of things. I've written a book that is yet to be published, but it's all on paper, and it's everything I learned about business. I found in my golf bag, and you can liken a round of golf to life. And at some point, you have to hit the golf shot, and it didn't turn out the way you wanted. But you know what? You've got to move on. You got to get over that shot, put it out of your mind, regroup, and go again. Because if you don't, you're just going to destroy your whole round of golf, your whole day, and your whole purpose in being there, which is to relax.
Right.
So it's I can liken many things to a round of golf, but it's that thing about being able to put it out of your mind. It's like the field goal kicker who misses one. He's got to put it out of his mind and go kick another one.
Yeah.
It has many sports analogies.
Right.
And there's just one way, just one thing that could be analogous to, but it all is the same message, isn't it? Move
yeah.
on.
Well, I really like the golf analogy because it's true, because each shot is an independent event. No matter what you did last time, you have a new club in your hand and there's the ball. You know, so and no one's it's not even coming at you 100 miles an hour. So come on, it's there on the ground. You know, it's not even running away
right.
from you like a tennis ball. It's sitting there on the ground. So do it. Yeah.
So and not only that, but also Donna Marie, that you not only have a new club in your hand, but depending on where you hit it, you might have a new ball, and you might have several of them in a row.
So that is truly a clean slate when you start with a new ball plus one, right?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, now your philosophy will work if you have like a business mindset or
yeah.
you're not you don't have your emotions involved. So if it's a balanced person or a business person or generally men, the tough love kind of approach, so just get over it, you know, because the guys don't even want to hear it. So sometimes that situation works. But I find if you're in like a grief state or you're very sensitive and if you thought you could get out of it, you would, but you can't see your way out of it, some of my techniques help them out of that process because they
sure.
didn't realize they had the power. So if you're kind of in a steady state, get over it is kind of fun. You know what I mean? But if you're in a down state, it actually might make things worse because they think, oh, it must be easy, but I can't do it, so there's really something wrong with me. So it actually could do harm when you're dealing with someone who's really down. So I guess the techniques are fine if, you know, if you're just with your buddies and,
yeah.
you know,
oh,
everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, different courses for different horses. There's no doubt about that. I think. But you mentioned something that piqued my interest right there in that little bit of information. And you said especially men. What are some of the major differences in dealing with loss between men and women as you found them to be?
Well, women take on. Okay, this is a huge generalization because everyone's an individual.
I understand. We're speaking generally, yes.
Yeah. In general, women take on huge emotional baggage, and we tend to put ourselves in it. Like if something happened, we might even think we played a role in it and did it, whereas most men would say, okay, it happened. Was I part of it or not? And let's move on, let's get to deal with it. And the men insulate themselves from this personal trap that women set for themselves. Men don't fall in so much. And then the men are always ready to just, you know, be stiff and tough and move on. And sometimes there's some inner healing that needs to be done, but they're taking so many overt actions that they can actually work through the process because they are doing stuff. Women tend to curl up at home on the couch, and they don't have some of those outlets. And unless they can break out of that, and they can go in those loops and really stay down. So it's two very different approaches in general.
In general, then, would you say that a woman takes it to heart more than a man?
Absolutely. In general, the women are always looking for what could have been, what might have been, what did I do, if only I would have done this or that. And you can go on endless spirals because there's no answers to those questions, where most men would not do that. And they say, okay, well, that's it. Life's tough. You know, boom, what's next? And even men that are widows, you know, 2 weeks later, they're at the movies and doing stuff. Not that they're over it. They're, you know, they certainly are grieving the loss of their spouse, but they're not grieving in this deep, dark hole. They're actually out. They go out to eat. They go out to movies, and people actually think they're insensitive by not staying home and crying for weeks and weeks and weeks. So men have a different way to cope. Not that they don't feel the pain. It's just they're not going to sit home with it.
The coping skills are different.
Absolutely.
They don't get involved so much in the shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Well, right, and they don't bring it on to me. If your spouse dies, you're like, oh my goodness, what did I do? Well, gee, that's really not even a. The question doesn't even merit asking. You know, what matters is, what do I do next? And how can I honor the memory? Or, you know, or relationships break up. There's just different situations where the men try to put the past behind them faster, and women like to talk about it. And the one good thing about the women's way is we try to learn our lessons, but I think many people are in that phase way too long. So the lessons are valuable, but you don't need to spend 9 or 10 months learning the lesson, you know, from a breakup or a job loss or a financial loss.
Or yeah. Repeating it.
Oh, exactly.
Repeating the problem. Or, you know, repeating the same issue over and over again. So it becomes a never-ending saga of breakup and finding new and breaking up and finding new. What's the common denominator here? It's you.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so.
And I'm afraid that's very common, that... If we didn't look for our lessons and we didn't pick them up and we didn't figure out what our role is in it, then we're not actually ready for the next relationship. The other thing is to actually, I was doing a radio and TV show, and one of my slogans was to be happy and whole. either as a single or as part of a couple. You're much better in a couple if you're a complete person by yourself. And you're more interesting, you're more exciting, you're more fun, you're more independent, you're more reliable, and then you're going to make a great partner. But if you're going into a relationship so that someone can take care of you, someone that can complete you, I'm sorry, Tom Cruise, but then you're going in broken. And then that's when you're likely to repeat these same things over and over because you're looking for someone else to fix you, to help you, to heal you, to save you. And no one else can do that. You need to do it yourself.
Right. You're only as powerful as your relationship, I think, is only as powerful as you are yourself.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you are, well, you said it best, but I'm just trying to reiterate it. It's a case where I know when I was in a relationship before that I came out of it and I was not not in good shape, but then I finally got myself back together again, and I got into a different relationship, and it was with Deborah, and we've been together for 23 years now.
Well,
so
there you go. Know, congratulations.
Well, thank you. But the point in saying it is that I do my thing, she does her thing. We work together. We're business partners and life partners, but we work together and we work separately. For instance, she's not always on the show today. She's not. She's doing other things at the office, at the house. So, and there is just as important as anything that I'm doing here on the radio show today. But then we compare our notes. We work together. We talk about whatever it is. But we were both definitely independent of one another during the course of our day, and that really goes a long way, I think, to making us a much stronger unit. And people have commented on that you guys are just so cool together. And well, frankly, we are. You know, just the way we are.
Well, fantastic. But the point is that you're two individuals. You're
That's
two
right.
happy, healthy individuals, and you choose to come together in partnership.
That's
when
right.
when you get in trouble is when one becomes dependent for their self-image or their finances or just to make them be a complete person. It might be fun for 5 or 6 months to have someone depend on you, but then it starts to feel like a ball and chain that most people over the long term do not want to be responsible for your happiness. And if you look at the way my 5E's works, is that I can't make you happy anyway. Only you can make you happy. So if you take that ownership, then you're going to be a much better life partner and a business partner and every other dimension. You'll be a better friend. So these tools and techniques work well beyond romantic relationships. They go across every relationship in your life. If you're happy, healthy, and fun, then people will gravitate to you. You'll have more friends. When you walk into a party, do you go to find the little sad sack that's leaning on the wall? Or do you go to where everybody's laughing and you want to be there?
That's right.
That's the energy that you send out, and that's the energy that people, like, do they want to tune into your show or not? You could tell if you're hanging on the edge of the wall. We know what you're broadcasting, but I want to go in the middle of the room because that's where the fun and energy is. And you can do that in every dimension of your life to say, what am I broadcasting? And that's what you're attracting back.
It's amazing because when you start talking saying that about the party and so on and so forth, I immediately equated it to networking groups. You know, you go out and networking and your business, everybody is trying to do things with business and trying to promote their business and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And lately I'm finding that with the situation in this country and business-wise, what it is right now, networking groups are much, much less enjoyable to attend because everybody is just moping around. And those that aren't moping around are so, I don't want to use the word phony, but I mean, it's obvious that they are really pressing to be up, if you know what I mean. But there's a reality here. And I'll go back to the way I handle things. It is what it is. Now, give it its due, give it its due, acknowledge what it is, and let's move on, and how are we going to make it better?
Right.
And that seems to me the way some of these groups should be working, looking at things, rather than getting up and saying, well, I know the economy's tough, and I know things aren't what they should be. And I go, oh, my gosh, don't tell me that again.
Yeah. Well, you've got an interesting perspective of the authenticity. So I think that's the foundational principle of this, is when you do the work on yourself and you truly do, like, eliminate unwanted feelings and embrace the situation, the second and third E, you do it in an authentic way so that, yes, you understand what's bad and you understand the situation. And you don't have to have this false positive. You can have a grounded positive that says, what is it that I can do in this economy? And there's actually ways to help other people in the room. And first of all, if everybody's going to these business mixers and they're all singing the blues, what's the outcome? If you get a free drink, then that's fine. But if you go in and say, okay, what I really need from you is, you know, do you have any leads? Do you have this? Do you have that? Do you know anybody that needs this or whatever? At least you're pitching. At least you're out there trying to advance your cause, but in an authentic way.
Well, the other thing is that there are so many opportunities there because people are all having different experiences with regard to what's going on in their own little world, their own little economy, and so on and so forth. But there are things that are transferable. And even if you're talking about things that the smallest thing that worked for you, it might work for somebody else. And you may as well share it because we're all in this thing together. It's not going to get better overnight for all of us, and it's going to be that rising tide floats all boats kind of thing. And we may as well talk about it and get the best out there that we can possibly get from one another and share. And that's positive, and that turns things in and of itself.
Right. The attitude. You just triggered me. I just started a Boomer Business Women startup group here in D.C., and we had our first meeting, and it was so funny because I said, what does everybody want? And they said, we're not sure. So we just started talking about what everybody does, and there were only four of us. There are going to be 19 next Thursday. But the ideas that just kept spinning up about where to get a website, where to get this, one lady is an artist. And I said, and she sets up scenes. And I said, I need to record a TV show in a fake studio. Can you help me set up a scene? Well, I had no idea. So all of a sudden, just by talking, all of us have these just triggers about how we might either use them ourselves or refer them to other people that we know. And so just the process of talking about what you do, what you offer, we were helping shape people's offerings, and we were also giving them referrals. So it's really magical if you go in with a problem-solving mentality.
Right, right. If you're there not to solve your own problems, but to help people solve theirs,
yeah,
it's amazing how much that would really strike a positive chord, and that can be contagious.
Well, that's the listening piece. That if you're really, I started the group, so I really want to help people. I'm in that stage where I'm just having so much fun. I got to do more stuff.
Sure.
So I really just wanted to listen to people. And like, I've been struggling on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter. Now I've got 23,000 Twitter followers. So I said, well, I'll show you what I did. And, you know, so some of the things that I've overcome are very easy for me. And to other people, it looks like Mount Everest. And so it's just fun to share what I've done. And the whole idea was to figure out how we could work together. And if nothing else, just provide moral support. I can't buy everyone's product or everyone's service or whatever. And the other thing was resources. I get about 100 emails a day because I've subscribed to everything under the sun. And I'm
sure.
So sorry. I've got 60,000 emails in my inbox. But this one
your server really likes that, don't they?
Well, it's only I still have like 9 more gig or something, so I'm fine.
Oh, you're
but
fine.
This one lady was doing time management, and I said, oh, my goodness, you know, do you follow Brian Tracy? Do you follow this one? Do you follow that one? So I was even starting to spin off some of my email contacts. And so just from a point of sharing resources, and you can do this on a personal level, you could do it on a business level, but it works much faster in a business level. But she was kicking off time management and other things, and I said, well, there's all sorts of tools and templates that she'd never heard of. And so she might add them as complementary products. And it just was part of a very quick conversation. So you would never underestimate the power of the tools and techniques and skills and knowledge that you have, which you take for granted,
right,
that you can share with others. Because I'm fundamentally a business person. I only became a bouncing back coach because of my personal situation. but I'm transitioning into helping women business owners, and the skills are the same. And it's just absolutely phenomenal where, you know, people just light up when you give them, you know, a $10 website or something, or just access to something that they found impossible before.
Right, right. Well, let's get back. We've kind of taken that off into that business niche, and I probably led us there. But I think it's a good place to be nonetheless, because that's what we all do. No, nothing ever happens until a sale is made. But nonetheless, let's say somebody is in need to bounce back. Maybe they realize it, maybe they don't. But what can somebody do to actually start that process?
Well, I guess it depends on where they are. If they're really at the bottom of their sorrow, then the message is hope and help, that there are resources out there, there is a better life. You might be thinking that you'll never be happy again, and I'm here to tell you that that is not true. There is hope and help. So depending on where they are in their cycle, there's all sorts of resources. There's dozens of websites. My website is bouncingbacknow.com. I've got books and ebooks and really good blogs and all sorts of information for people. Now, if they're further advanced, then my message is one of resilience, that if you understand that loss is a normal part of life, if you understand that challenges and people are a normal part of life, what can you do to arm yourself to get more equipped to face the world as it is? Not the way, you know, the fairy tale that you wish everybody was nice and you wish people had your best interests. That's not the way it is. So if you equip yourself with resilience, then that's the other piece of the message. I've got some interesting things. I've got a core values exercise that I love, and it was instrumental. When I tell people that I let my fiancé stay in my house a year and a half longer than I wanted, they always tell me I'm nuts and I should have never done it. I'm like, well, yeah. But my mother was dying, and he had 17 years of good track record. And one of my core values was reconciliation. I was trying to fix it. So I spent all of my time saying, I can fix this, I can fix this. When I realized that my core value was reconciliation, the sky opened up, and I said, now I know why I did what I did. And you might have done it completely differently because your core value is different. And so I've got this really cool core values exercise that can get you in touch with your values. You probably don't know them, and you can do it in any situation, as a parent, as a spouse, as a worker, whatever the current, you know, friction in your life is, you can assess those values. And it's really fun. And I've got this other energy tool where most people, 85% of the people, are walking around either as victims or angry. Now, those are not very good states, and if you can understand why you're in those states, this energy leadership index can propel you up out of there and direct that energy in good places. So there's all sorts of resources, and I guess that's the message for today, is wherever you are, if you're not where you want to be, there's a resource, there's a tool, there's a method to move you forward and just, you know, marshal whatever energy you need, you know, to just to take that first step.
Wherever you go, there you are, but you can move on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have women come to me, and they say they will never be happy again. I'm like, that's absolutely not true. We can work on this, and we can get you there. I can't guarantee that everything will be the way it used to be. That's just not going to happen. But you can be happy again, and you actually will find new and different things. And if you're in the dark part of it now, you really can't see it, and you don't even want to hear it. But because I know when I was in the depths of it, people said, oh, it's for the best. And I'm like, I'm going to smack you. Losing my mother, my fiancé, and a couple $100,000, I just don't see how that's the best of anything.
I don't see it. Let me see. What would I rather have? Would I rather do that, or would I rather stick myself in the eye with a stick? What are my choices here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is better?
Right. So there's a lot of unskilled people saying a lot of things, and they might mean well, they might not, but they might mean well but still be very clumsy at it. So the overall message of hope and help is really the resounding message. And you find someone to work with that resonates with you, that if you feel that they understand you, or that, you know, you can associate with them, then that's the help. If you feel better after you talk with them, that's a good resource. If you feel worse after you talk with them, steer clear.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like I wrote a blog about people saying things that they don't really, well, I mean, they just say it. They say automatic things. Somebody loses a loved one, I'm sorry for your loss. Maybe because it's an awkward thing, but I mean, they'll say that, and does it really make somebody feel that much better? I don't think so. That's just my feeling.
There's one, though. I have in the back of my book, Bouncing Back from Loss, I have 21 stupid things to say to people because these are what people said to me. Actually, I'm not so troubled by I'm sorry for your loss. What I really detest is I know how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way on earth you know how I feel. Or people come, when I lost my mother, my man, and my money and my health, people say, yeah, the same thing happened to me. And I said, oh, you lost your mother. Oh, no. I'm like, well, you lost your fiance. Oh, no. I'm like, well, then why are you coming up to me telling me the same thing happened to you? Or my situation was worse. So I came up with 21 stupid things. So it's just really fun. But I would think that most people are just clumsy but well-intentioned. And that's how I kind of let it all, it all rolls off me now. But
one of the things that kind of gets to me is other than sorry for your loss is call me if I can do anything for you. Has anybody ever called them? And how many people were really there? That seems to me to be, do I really want to be there for that person, or is it just something that I'm saying?
Oh, it should be a genuine offer. What I try to have people
do.
It
should be. You're absolutely right.
But I try to train people to say, I have like 5 good things to say and 5 bad things to say. What I advise people is to say, what errands can I run for you? Or can I cut your, if it's a widow or something, someone offering to cut their grass? Or just, can I pick up your dry cleaner? Just these small little things, very specific, very something, or just bring them dinner, bring them things.
Right.
But if it's not authentic, if it's just an empty phrase, it really rings hollow, and the person knows that, and they're not really receptive. If you catch someone right at the edge of a loss, they don't even hear you. They are so tied up in the loss. But later, a week or two later, it would be good to drop over, take them some food, then cut their grass or do different things. And those things are very, very powerful. I talked to a woman, and 9 months later, she said, what was the turning point? When my neighbors came over and, they think the guy took down her Christmas lights or something. And she just said, that was so special because I would never have asked anybody to do that. I know it's a horrible job, but the neighbor just came over and did it for her. And it was something she needed, and it was something he was willing to do. And she said that was one of the turning points that said that somebody actually cares. So it just depends on if it's authentic. I think that's if you truly want to help them, then don't ask what you can do. Just go do something, or either bring them food or take them out to lunch or take them to a movie or do something do whatever it is that would be beneficial to them to get the person up and out.
Sure. Couple last things I kind of like to touch base on before we wrap this up. This number one is bouncing, the act of bouncing back, is it the same for everyone? Number one, and number two, how do you know if you're actually making progress in your attempt to bounce back?
Well, bouncing back is a very individual process. It depends on your loss. It depends on you. It depends on everything. So everyone kind of goes through the normal grief model, but they do it at different rates and stages. So if someone gets over a relationship at 8 months and it takes you 2 years, that's fine. That might be your process. So we're all different, and that's why it's very difficult to compare. When you know you're getting better is that you're spending less and less time deep down dark. If you can say, I'm going to cry for 1 hour, and that's it. As soon as your hour's up, you're done. If you could start controlling that, then you know that you're laying the framework for a positive, tomorrow. Those are the key signals that when you can commit to yourself that you're going to cry for an hour, and at the end of the hour you stop, jump up and do something else, you've given yourself the power.
So once you get to the point that you are back in control,
Yes.
And is that a good way of thinking of it also?
Yes, because if you can plan your day and your feelings will come over you, I mean, there's no way to stop a feeling, but you can send it on its merry way. They keep coming into your mind, but you don't have to dwell on them. And when you take charge of that process, then you begin to own your day, and then you own your week, and then you own your month, and you begin to own your new life. And then there's nothing that can stop you.
You can start to choose out.
Yeah, I choose happy.
Yep, there you go. Well, Donna Marie, this has been a phenomenal hour that we've spent together. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and I'm glad you could get on the show and we could make that connection early on with I don't know what in the world was happening, but nonetheless, we've got you, and that's what was important. Now, do you do your coaching? Do you do your coaching over the phone as well as in person?
Mostly over the phone. I have people all over the country, and it works really, really well because we're actually concentrating on what we're saying, and it really works wonderfully.
Mm-hmm. So how can people get hold of you? That's the next question and the thing of importance that has to be answered.
Okay. My website is bouncingbacknow.com, and you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and everything else under Bouncing Back Now. That's my moniker. So just drop me a line, and there's all sorts of interesting things. And I've got a great blog. I've gotten really good reviews on my blog.
Very good. Well, Donna Marie Thompson, Bouncing Back Now, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We enjoyed having you on the show, as I said, and I'm sure that maybe somewhere along the line we'll be able to talk again, especially through some of the connections that put us together in the first place.
Well, thank you, Pete. It's been really my pleasure.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Me too. Bye-bye.
Take care now. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show here on Blog Talk Radio, where our special guest has been Donna Marie Thompson of Bouncing Back Now and bouncingbacknow.com. Take a look and see everything that she's involved with, and especially if you have a need, if you've had a loss or something like that, she might be able to help you out with that. So it'd be good information and well worth your while. We'll be back again tomorrow. We'll be back at 12 noon tomorrow with Fervently Speaking with Eileen Proctor. She'll be doing her show, so I'll just be engineering that one for her, but she'll be on the air tomorrow at 12 o'clock, Fervently Speaking, all about pets, the pet lady. The top dog, Eileen Proctor, will be on the air. So stop by and listen to that or listen to any of the archives for the Boomer the Babe Show or any of our authors that are also hosting their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk. So until then, this is Pete Peters saying have a great day. Deborah, I hope you're working hard, and we'll talk to you soon. I'm on my way. On my way back to the home office. And just make sure that you make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.